I am Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
Podcast for your ears.
Antiques.
For your ears.
What antiques are we talking about this week?
I kind of want to follow up on my last one a little bit. Yeah? We're going to talk about Griswold cast iron.
Griswold.
Because I heard everyone out there, they were saying, that doesn't help me talking about cast iron. I look around, I see so much cast iron. I don't know what I want. I'm here to tell you what you want.
Is it Griswold?
It's Griswold.
Griswold is what we want.
It might be Griswold. But Griswold is easily the most visible and, like, preeminent name in vintage and antique cast iron.
Cool.
It's not anymore. Oops. We'll get into that. Griswold started from humble beginnings as the Selden-Griswold... to say the dash. The Selden-Griswold Manufacturing Company in Erie, Pennsylvania in 1865. It was two families that had married into each other, actually to combine their manufactory.
Yeah.
That, it's weird, but it's the 1860s.
I mean, it worked for Procter & Gamble.
Well, it worked is a strong word. it was started by Selden, who we don't care about because, spoiler alert, he's about to be written out of the story.
Fuck Selden.
Fuck you, Selden. I hope you can hear this, ghost of John Selden. Matthew Griswold is the name we care about because we're talking about Griswold and not Selden. They made separable butt hinges, hardware, stovepipe dampers, thimbles, and other wood stove and wood stove accessories.
Butt hinges?
Separable butt hinges.
Okay, so if you need to separate a butt, but like you want it in such a way as you can put it back together again conveniently, you'd use a hinge?
A separable butt hinge, yeah.
All right, good to know.
It's a woodworking term.
My version's more fun.
Don't be juvenile. So anyway, they operate. They operated at the butt factory. The glorious beginnings of Griswold cast iron literally started at a place that I'm not fucking you was called the butt factory.
Yeah. Someone's gotta hinge the butts, D.
Well, otherwise the butts will never part.
And that would be a true tragedy.
So what they get up to in Pennsylvania.
Listen, the Amish are freaky.
No lie, it was really hard to take these notes because after I wrote down the butt factory, I could not stop laughing. Because, a butt meant a butt back then, too.
Uh-huh.
So they knew what they were doing.
They knew they were making a butt factory. Listen, we all know.
Sadly, it was renamed the Selden and Griswold Manufacturing Company in 1873, which is major buzzkill. Thanks, guys.
Major butts kill.
Wanted to make sure that came in crisp.
Yeah, you slapping me in the face for my pun.
Yeah, your denim covered face. Oh boy.
Yeah, my denim masquerade mask. What of it?
So after they tried to make. Wow. Yeah.
You tried to move on.
I was, well, then the vision was assaulting me, like, no, you can't. And then I was hearing, masquerade.
Yeah.
Denim faces on parade. Masquerade. Or, like, jasquerade.
So it's Phantom of the Opera, but it's all JNCO.
Perfect. And he's got the biggest, widest JNCO pants.
Yes.
Or does he have skinny jeans and that's why he's castigated?
Probably. Listen, I'm not a doctor. I just fund poorly thought out musical remakes.
Rodgers and Hammerstein's get at us. Hammerstein's?
Neither of them had anything to do with the Phantom.
They didn't.
And so Griswold.
Garfield.
No.
So Griswold. After it was sadly renamed from the Butt Factory.
A loss we will never get over.
And I'll never forgive. The entire company was bought out by Matt Griswold in 1884 because, like I said, fuck the Seldens. And almost immediately, the plant burnt down.
Are you telling? So they had a butt factory and then it burned down?
Well, it wasn't the butt factory anymore.
Well, no, it no longer had the protection of the butt name.
It was not safe.
So, the butts have burned down, and now what?
I did some digging, and I was, because I was curious if anyone else had put, like, I was curious if anyone else had put two and two together. And, like, he bought the company out from Selden, and then, like, next thing that happens is his building burns down. And I was just like,
I smell delicious insurance money. I don't know about you.
That too. Maybe that too. There's a lot that could have been happening, but the police weren't invented yet.
I mean, it's easy to fund your remodeling if you burn down the old factory and get the insurance money.
Funny you should mention that it was almost immediately rebuilt.
Yeah. Hmm. Anyway.
It was renamed again. Griswold, this is going to be a theme in Griswold, by the way.
Butts?
No, renaming. Part of why I want to do this is to demystify a lot of the absolute jumbled information that comprises these antiques. Because I feel like that's my duty as someone who knows stuff. Anything. And so it was renamed the Griswold Manufacturing Company in 1886 because brand integrity, I've never met her.
It wasn't invented yet.
In 1919, Matthew Griswold died a decrepit old Republican that no one liked.
Well then.
And there's like a lot of like mention that he was a congressman like twice.
Well, is this like pre-party value flipping Republican?
I don't know. Was
because like the civil rights movement kind of turned everything upside down turnwise.
What was it like in 1919?
Well, okay.
When he died.
I don't know 1819. I just know that when Lincoln was around, it was the Democratic Republican Party. And it was a single unified party that, having Abraham Lincoln in it, you might guess, was more on the side of abolition than not.
Mm.
And the Republican Party kind of continued with that trend. And then the Civil Rights Movement happened and everybody, like, did a 180.
Switch places!
Yeah, basically. Everyone had a mad scramble musical chairs, and now we have the alignments we do now.
Well, I'm sorry, Matt Griswold, if I got you wrong. You were still decrepit. He was like 90.
Well, then.
So after that, his son, Matt Griswold Jr., because we are just really good at this.
You know, for someone who works exclusively with old shit, you sure have no respect for the elderly.
I do. I have a deep respect for the elderly, not just not the dead ones. Wait.
Deed?
Wait, that... doesn't mean how it sounds.
Does it?
I love old people.
Okay, good. So you hate babies.
I really do. I'm not gonna lie to you about that.
God damn it, Dean.
Matt Griswold Jr., although babies are future history. Matt Griswold Jr.
Whoa. You're blowing my fucking mind here, man.
I don't even do weed. So Matt Griswold was president from 1905 to 1914, which is a stunningly short run. And again, I couldn't find information on what cut his interest in being president short. Because he didn't die.
Losing the election?
You don't get elected to president of the company you own. You just kind of are there.
No, like the board votes you in.
I don't know if that's how it worked back then. Maybe you're right.
I think so. But again, not a mathematician.
No, none of us are. Math isn't even real. Regardless of why, the look you gave me was just like, I don't know why you said that, but I'm glad you did, because you did look sort of delighted.
So Griswold.
So Marvin Griswold, his younger brother, fucking named him Marvin. This is a clear sign you didn't like that one. He was president from 1914 until he did chomp it in 1926.
Damn.
After that, it just kind of, it waterfalls through the Griswold family's fingers. It is really hard to keep track of who owns the company after Marvin. It just kind of, pachinkos on down the line.
So what happened when the stock market had its infamous boom in the 30s?
They actually did fine. Surprisingly, Griswold was one of the few companies that, spoiler warning, wouldn't crash until much later, relatively speaking. A little bit after the introduction of antitrust laws, but...
Oh, weird. Anyway.
And capitalist reform. but since they would go on to produce household goods, they did better.
Okay.
Like, you see that with a lot of staple companies manage to scrape by and survive.
I know you mean, like, companies that produced everyday necessary goods, but my mind immediately went to staples.
Yeah. Everyone needed them.
Everyone.
So, the company moved on to making skillets, pots, grinding mills, and waffle irons in 1870 from their wood stoves and wood stove accessories. They did tobacco cutters in 1883, and as these continue to do better and better... By 1884, they'd introduced wheeled spittoons, kettles, Dutch ovens, roasters, gridirons, and so many different shapes and sizes of pots and pans.
So when you say wheeled spittoons, Does that mean a spittoon that you could roll around the room for your convenience?
Yes.
That's amazing!
And you could in fact, like, roundhouse kick it across the room.
Hell yeah, I would.
If you, I mean, it is cast iron, though.
I mean, you know, I can dream.
Is it, note here, I wanted to fit her in. Miss Etta Moses is there as well.
Who?
She was very famous as Aunt Ellen. She was originally hired explicitly to answer letters asking for help.
So if people wrote in being like, how do I get the seasoning on this pan? She could write back and be like, fucking melt some butter in it, bro. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. She was customer support, which made Griswold actually a really unique company at the time.
Oh. So the only people, like, actually responding once people have given them money.
Exactly. And as a result, Aunt Ellen, as she would go on to be known, became a little bit of a minor celebrity. After that, she actually went on to do cookbooks and guides to cooking in cast iron.
Go ask Aunt Ellen.
Yeah. Not a book about drugs. And I just wanted to make sure that she was in the story, which doesn't fit in very nicely anywhere else.
Listen, I appreciate her.
Thank you. She was quoted famously as saying, and I promise this has nothing to do with anything else I'm about to talk about, "One is considered fortunate nowadays if by chance one of these iron utensils is handed down to them from the second to the third generation. It is on account of these wonderful cast iron utensils that you have such fond recollections of the rich, juicy steaks and chops your grandmother used to serve." Which seems a little insulting to your grandmother, because I would have given the credit to her over the pan.
But those steaks wouldn't have been as good without the pan, Dee.
Again.
Your grandmother's cooking was nothing.
Again, grandma is wounded. My grandma's cooking was famously very bad.
Sorry, going back to your grandmother's cooking for a second. Was she the one who used to, like, take actual ocean water to boil things in?
Yeah. My grandmother's food was, some called it, bizarrely salty.
Because she wasn't salting tap water, she was hauling water directly from the ocean and just boiling that.
Yes, yes.
So what you're saying is she's thrifty.
If we had periwinkles, and yes, we ate those, she would fucking wooden spoon the pot out of your hand if you tried to rinse those suckers. And she would argue, you'd be like, no, it gets hot, so it's safe, it's fine. And I was like, Grandma, we live right near a boat harbor. I'm not so sure, but, you know, I hate those periwinkles all the same.
Yeah, and you're fine now, so.
It's weird, right? It's weird looking back and thinking that I ate that like it was normal, because I see them at the beach now and I rock it back to that time, and I don't think I could do it again.
So, Griswold.
So, eventually it landed in Eli Griswold's hands. Now, by the time it hit Eli Griswold, problems had started coming up for the Griswold Company. It was the late 1930s, and people were trying a lot of new and different things for kitchenware. People were doing cast aluminum, enamel coatings. This was when you started seeing non-stick surfaces being touted.
Sorry, you can cast aluminum?
Yeah. You can do anything with aluminum, honestly.
Damn. Anyway.
Add to that, the fact that nobody mentions the horrible internal labor disputes as the workers were trying to unionize.
I mean, you know.
And, like, profits and the quality of the goods tanked significantly. Because to keep up, they had to cut out a lot of... I'm gonna get into this again. I kind of covered it last time we talked about cast iron. I'll do it again. It's not because the metal was, like, more bad in the future. Like, iron ore is the same. And I'm gonna end that sentence right there.
It's not because the metal was more bad in the future?
Yeah, did you like how I said that?
Yes, I loved it. Anyway.
It's not because iron ore mysteriously got shitty as time marched on. I keep seeing that, and I didn't understand it as a point of logic, and my fears were proven by a couple of Griswold experts saying, no, I don't know why anyone says that.
Probably for the same reason they say the pyramids are fake because the stone is older than the construction.
Yeah, that kind of thing, like...
That's how stone works.
Yeah, that's how rocks be.
That's how rocks do.
Any and all quality dips were because they had to keep up with a quickly advancing industry. They'd kind of been resting on their laurels this whole time. You know, cast iron was one of those things people didn't think was going to go away. Everyone thought this is the superior cooking material, and people still think that. But, hit the 1940s and onward, you saw a lot of innovation, for better or for worse. and it was really hard to keep up. They needed to make it cheaper and faster, and the handcrafting just didn't work anymore. So quality dips, and most people will say that the quality dip is negligible. Quality dips are all due to a lack of focus on handcrafting. And hand finishing, very importantly.
Just rubbing that butter in.
Ooh, you rub that butter. Well, no, it's now it's sandcasted and then, like, painstakingly hand finished on the inside.
Oh, so it's, like, cast rough and then they're, like, hand smoothing it out?
Yep.
Damn.
It's a really fascinating thing. Did you ever touch an old antique cast iron pan? Like a nice one?
Not like on purpose.
Okay, that was a weird answer. it's so much smoother than you think it's going to be. Because I've handled so much like cheap, rough, shoddy cast iron in my life that handling like a fine piece of Griswold is really unusual.
Cast iron silk.
It is cast iron silk, don't laugh at me. It's cast iron satin, thank you, sir. You like silk better than satin? I can tell from your face.
No, I think we're just gonna have to do an episode at some point on the difference between silk and satin so I can, like, tell.
We can do that. Sounds like a good mini-sode. So, Eli Griswold sold the company and dipped in 1946 in response to the fact that it didn't look like he could bring the company back up. It was acquired by McGraw Edison of Chicago, which I have written here as Chicago, so take that, everyone living there.
Jesus.
And was sold to, dun-dun-dun, the Wagner Manufacturing Company in 1957.
Damn.
You might recognize the Wagner, here it goes again, you might recognize that company as the active and most public and visible, what is the word I'm looking for? Not rivals, competitors in the cast iron market. So they hit pay dirt and they bought Griswold. And then after that, they started manufacturing Griswold using the original molds, and they left the markings on, but it was Wagner and not Griswold making it. They were trying to pull a little trickaroo on you.
They were pulling a Martha Stewart.
Yeah, they were really Martha Stewarting you up hard.
Damn.
Yeah. Even worse, once Wagner took hold of the company, they immediately shut down the plant and left 60 plus people without a job. Instead of...
rude?
Acquiring them with the company, I guess.
Dick move.
Yeah. It was later sold to Textron in 1959 when Wagner proved that it couldn't keep up either, and then sold to General Housewares in 1969, and then to the American Culinary Corp in 1970, and I believe American Colony Corp still owns the logo. I mention this because, repros ahoy, mateys.
Ah.
So that's the brief, short, and like, honestly a little sad history of Griswold cast iron. Do you want to know more about acquiring Griswold cast iron?
Sure.
I have here in my hot little hands a guide to determining the age of Griswold's markings, which is notoriously very difficult because they overlapped them all the time constantly.
Ah.
Which is an interesting choice for an organizational technique. So, determining age. This is rough and dirty, but this will get you through. And there are a lot of people very dedicated to helping you narrow this down to the year. So the marking Selden and Griswold, the oldest marking, between 1865 and 1883. Get ready, this is about to get buck wild. It was marked Erie between 1865 and 1909. You might notice it's a very long range. Those are considered the best quality. If you want the finest cast iron money can buy, that is the marking and the age range you want. Again, people think this is because of the iron. It is not. You look at heat rings. Heat rings were present before the 1940s, indicated that were for use on a wood stove, making them older. Although some items with heat rings after the era of wood stoves are considered rare because they were outmoded already. And I did not know that this was what the marking was. The marking that has a spider with the body of a skillet and the word Erie was from 1874 to 1905. These are really very common on... like, I think I read a couple places that it's possible the only pieces that had this marking were the number 8 skillet and the numbers 7, 8, and 9 teapot. The spider can be faded, which makes identifying these really hard, because while the word Erie was incised, the spider was raised as part of the mold.
Oh, so it would wear off.
It would wear off, yeah.
That said, I really want a spider teapot.
I can't believe that the spider's body is the skillet. That is so fucking cute.
Right?
The marking that is the diamond shape with the word Erie inside it, 1884 to 1909. You might start thinking to yourself, God, these are really long ranges of time. They are. This is the one featured on the very rare 4-inch toy skillet. And the hardest... No, I'm sorry, this one isn't the hardest. Griswold apostrophe possessive S Griswolds, made from 1884 to 1912, are most frequently seen in the number 6 through number 12 and number 10 skillets, with 6 and 9 being the most common models of that time. Here's the hardest one. The Griswold inside a cross, present from 1897 to, drumroll please, 1957. Good luck, everybody! Conceivably any period of time!
But D, when do they put the spider on the cross?
That was, like, after the marked Erie in a diamond shape, and is also considered pretty rare. The small and a medium Griswold in crosses, those are considered lower quality. Again, because people think that the metal was bad. I can't stress this enough that that's not how this works. It's not true, but I mention it because it will affect the prices people will pay. And it will affect their availability. And it will affect how people see you when you collect them all. And they're gonna be like, what are you, some kind of pleb? With the bad iron? The crappy iron? The iron unblessed by Gaia? I don't know why they said the last part. So, within the Griswold Cross era, there are very exhaustive breakdowns of all the different ways that Erie is written in until it is excised entirely. The slanted Erie logo within the cross is considered the last of the good metal. This is actually the last time they would hand finish them to the extent that they had been. After that, in 1957 and onward, they would have either the Griswold logo with what they call a ghost logo that said Wagner, or the Griswold and Wagner logo. Nobody likes these. Because they're confusing. Personally, I think they'd be kind of cool, but I don't know anything. I don't collect this. Another thing that makes Griswold really tough. Did you want this to be harder?
Sure.
Griswold wasn't always sold as Griswold.
Oh no, secret Griswold.
Lots of secret Griswold. Here's a list of brands that Griswold manufactured and then rebranded. Selden Griswold, or The American. Erie. Griswold's Erie. Victor. Griswold. Iron Mountain, which has no markings and can only be identified by the handle. Good Health. Best Made SR and Co., made for Sears and Roebuck. Puritan, also made for Sears and Roebuck, which seems strange given that you made one that says this one's for Sears and Roebuck. Merit, for Sears and Roebuck. Acme, Eldorado, Leo, Classic, Triumph, Duke, Alfred Anderson, and Western Importing. And none of them are marked Griswold. But those are all companies that were manufactured by Griswold. And most Griswold collectors will consider it a Griswold piece. Because I heard you saying this isn't enough of a challenge. Some of the rarer pieces. Number 15 fish skillet. It is oblong for fish. The Erie number 5 skillet with heat ring. And, like I mentioned before, the 4-inch child's toy skillet. Which is skillet number 1. I was fascinated to find out that skillets number 3, 6, and 8 are perhaps the least valuable because they were sold as packages for newlyweds. So everyone had one. There are some special terms for Griswold pans because this wasn't confusing enough. You have the smoke, fire, or heat ring, which I have mentioned a couple times before. That's a raised rim underneath the bottom of the pan that runs the circumference or slightly smaller than the circumference of the item that kept the pan above the heat source back in the wood stove days. This is often abbreviated to SR in auction listings and people who know. You have smooth bottom, abbreviated to SB. That's a skillet or pan without a smoke, fire, or heat ring. No, smoke and fire are incorrect. It's a heat ring. You have pattern numbers, abbreviated as PN. It's a number referring to a pattern design. These are often grossly incorrect. So, like, the pattern numbers, they were not, much like the markings, they were not stable. Although, some muffin pans can only be identified by pattern number. While others, like Dutch ovens and trivets, have wildly varying pattern numbers despite being the exact same thing. And letters that accompany pattern numbers from time to time, no one cares, so don't worry about it. They were usually to indicate runs, but that doesn't affect anything about the collectability, so everyone just forgot. Unless it's a muffin pan. The extra finish, or plated, abbreviated as EF or B. These abbreviations are pretty easy. That's cast iron that's been coated with nickel or chromium. Wasn't very popular. Hammered. These are actually rare and hard to find. It was metal that was deliberately dimpled either in mold or with a hammer for the aesthetic. Hinged refers to a lid and bottom piece hooked together as a set so they wouldn't get lost. Spoiler alert, they tend to get lost. They're considered desirable just because they're cool. And also because, more than other pieces, they tend to keep their lids. This is seen in skillets, Dutch ovens, and waffle iron bases. And the porcelain or enamel finish, which came in later to try to keep up with other enamel-coated kitchenware. Those are pieces coated in enamel or porcelain, and they don't have an abbreviation, because frankly, if you need one, please see someone. They started in the 1920s. Originally came in four colors: turquoise, canary, jade, and mandarin red, which is orange. So, the porcelain coatings were usually strictly on the interior with an unfinished black interior. Until the 1930s, when they introduced two-toned coated interior-exterior pots and pans, and extended the numbers that they did. At first, they mostly just did skillets and a couple of Dutch ovens. Now they did pretty much anything that had a lid. The two-toned colors were variations on green and red and yellow and blue, with cream or gray as a secondary color. These are actually kind of valuable, if they're in good condition, because the porcelain didn't react well to heat, and tended to crack and bubble. So if you find one in nice condition, they can be worth a fair bit of money. And I do mean fair bit of money when I'm talking about Griswold, because the rare pieces, they climb pretty quickly from modest at around, like, 50, to pretty sure the last one that went, like, what was it, 7,000 on auction?
At auction?
At auction.
Damn.
Yeah, for 7,000 for a utilitarian piece is a lot.
It is.
Spotting fakes. This is actually one of those things I think everyone should have more confidence that they can spot fakes. If you're curious, GriswoldandWagner.com has a fantastic set of photos of side-by-sides of fakes with a real item. These are great for training your eyes to see the differences. Quality in cast iron is pretty much your quickest, fastest, easiest tell. The repros and the recasts and so on and so forth, they have a heavy, gritty, and bumpy stone-like feeling, which actually I think a lot of people associate cast iron with commonly. This is not accurate to vintage pieces, Griswold specifically. Like I mentioned before, Griswold has this really smooth, like, somewhere between stone-like and porcelain finish.
This hand-worked finish.
A beautiful hand-worked finish. And once you handle it, you can tell the difference immediately. So the texture is huge and the weight is huge because they were made thin and strong and as lightweight as they could possibly make them. Recasts and repros aren't concerned with that.
They're gonna be rough and heavy?
Rough and heavy, which is the name of my new book. It's a dirty book.
Well then.
They also tend to be sloppy in a lot of ways. Elements on them will be like crooked and slanted and just plain bad. For example, the hanging handles on a corn stick pan will be completely weird shapes, where on the original it will be a nice, neat rectangle. These will be trapezoids or just lumps. They also have a lot of inconsistencies that, in retrospect, don't make any sense. Corn stick pan, again, as an example, has two hanging holes, very commonly on the reproduction. There is no reason to have two. The original only has one. And when you're talking about quality stuff, it's all in the detail. Really common one, a really frequent thing you run into is on the hanging handles for like pans and stuff, you can see like there's a raised lip underneath it. On the original, this is very finely crafted. It's very thin. On the repros, it's big and wonky and not well crafted. I don't know how to say it other than just, it looks bad. Like the fakes look bad. They are easier in this way. Other things, screws, in any kind of, like, two-part. If you see a screw, I would be very suspicious. You see this a lot in the mortar and pestles, which are considered something of a rarity. If it's got a screw, probably don't trust it, definitely don't pay top dollar, ask someone who knows. I gotta make a correction. I think on our cast iron episode, I said that the gate marks should be on the bottom and not the side. If I did, that's incorrect. Other way around, I got it twisted, got it screwed. Gate marks should never be on the bottom. That is incorrect. They should always be on the side for an original piece. This is another one of those really big common tells. And that's really about it.
Cool.
Do you feel like you would be able to walk into Griswold a little more informed?
Yes.
And a little less, like, horribly confused like I have always been about it.
I'm gonna touch all the pans.
Touch them. Touch them. Feel their fine craftsmanship. I'm not gonna lie, like, looking into it really made me, like, I don't wanna cook on cast iron now.
Do it.
I'm gonna get me a cast iron pan.
Do it.
I'm gonna beat a man to death with
it. Wait, no. No, don't. Don't do that part.
If you want to get super well crazy in deep with time, and also this is one of the sources, check out castironcollector.com/griswoldskillets. They have a table with what your, well, like, where your markings will intersect to represent the time it came from. Also, big shout out to castironcollector.com. It's a fabulous resource. Other sources today include viewers like you. You didn't help. The fabulously named kitchensanity.com, article on Griswold cast iron, hunker.com, how to determine the age of a Griswold skillet, gearpatrol.com, the delightfully titled Why You Should Buy This $2,800 Cast Iron Skillet. I was almost convinced. And griswoldcookware.com.
Cool.
Yeah.
Unrelated to cast iron, there's also Death by Silver by Melissa Scott and Amy Griswold.
Oh, my favorite Griswold.
I have been thinking about nonstop since this episode began, and which I was frantically looking for on my bookshelves throughout the recording, but could not find, so I had to look it up on my phone. It's a gay steampunk fantasy murder mystery, and it's very good and fun. So check it out while you're, you know, rubbing down your cast iron pans.
And thinking about how putting a gear on something makes it steampunk. I could feel how excited some people listening got when you said all that, by the way. Like, it was, like, resonating. Like, in the future, someone was just like, I just found my new favorite book.
I hope so. It's really fun. If you would like to talk to us about Griswold cast iron pans or gay steampunk fantasy literature...
And please talk to us about both.
You can contact us directly at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com, or you can check out our Facebook at facebook.com/antiquesfreaks, and while you're there, you can join our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends.
And I will admit, it is the easiest platform for me to talk to people on.
Yay!
The one thing Facebook got right.
If you would like to purchase some vintage goods, you can check out our Etsy at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks, where we have t-shirts and stickers with the podcast logo on them, and also a wide variety of vintage books growing by the day.
By the minute. It's shameful.
If you would like to listen to deleted scenes, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks, and you can also join the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month.
Which is good times for all. Except the postcard.
I feel like the postcard's having a good time.
Actually, you know what? The postcard probably really enjoys seeing a new face.
Yeah.
Adopt one today. In the
Special shout out to our current patrons for helping us pay our hosting fees and sundry other podcast expenses and getting us ever closer to buying a second microphone and producing bonus episodes.
And getting us through the day.
I mean, you know. And thank you for listening.
That's right, you.
Yes, you. Goodbye.
Bye.